This is Gary welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, August 12, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL Research from the home office. LL is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch for more instructions. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Is the home crew online and ready to go?
We are.
Yes, sir.
Ready to go.
All right. In which case, we shall proceed. Our quote today comes from September 22nd, 2007. Quo says, "There are two minds that interpenetrate each other in each seeker's head and heart. One mind is concerned with making choices in order to function well in terms of the needs of the day. There is another mind which is impersonal in that it is shared by everyone, and that mind is consciousness. Each seeker has both of these within him, plaited up as the tresses of a maiden, often indistinguishable from each other and always interwoven."
Thank you, Gary. It is a mystery that we shall never plumb entirely. To know that all of us have one heart. So many ways. Our age, our sexuality. How we were brought up, what culture we live in, what work we do. Varying opinions on everything under the sun. And yet, who are we? But one. How do we find this part of ourselves that is in common with everyone? And what use, what value is it to us? We find it on every page that we read, in the margins and the spaces between the lines and words. We find it in every conversation between two, in the silences, in the pauses. And it is useful only to those who wish to be spiritual. Otherwise, it has no value whatsoever. For it will distract you from the cost of this and the strategy of that and the pie chart on page 32 and how we might obtain power and wealth. these do seem to be very useful. We who have only that in our lives build our lives on sand and are easily blown away. Go wrong when money escapes between our fingers and we are poor, when our strategies don't work and we have nothing, being brought down to the dust to begin to know ourselves as spiritual. Almost always it does take suffering to awaken us to the mystery within, to that which gives us true stability and strength, real character, real knowledge of ourselves, and what our essence is. We learn how to rejoice in those silences we offer ourselves. We learn how to worship in that time we take to bring our mind gives us. We who know that our kingdom is indeed not of this world. Then we may rejoice in poverty. We may be patient in tribulation. We may serve when we seemingly have nothing to offer. Dear ones, we can always love. We can always open our hearts, always be silent and know.
Amen. Thank you, Carla. Our first question comes from JP, who writes, according to Google, almost 2,755 people end their own life on this planet every day. How very sad, he adds. In all of the information from Carla's sources, Carla's channeled sources, has any of it ever mentioned if the solar or sublogos or hierarchy, as JP refers to it, has ever talked about maybe, perhaps, easing all the different kinds of catalysts that we are exposed to? It's almost self-evident that many cannot handle the problems they asked for. And like Rob warned, this action really waylays one's growth and evolution. So what are the group's thoughts on JP's statement and questions?
Well, I will be glad to start. I checked with the Google search that's on our site and discovered that Rod did mention suicide once. When asked about it, he mentioned that it was impractical in that it slowed you down. You had to go through healing when you had killed yourself, just as you would have to do when someone else killed you. There was no judgment. There was only the explanation of its impractical nature. As the easing, the amount of catalyst we have. I think those who set this particular creation up regretted it to some extent after they saw how it worked out. They were trying for the maximum efficiency or efficacy in bringing us to third density graduation as rapidly as possible. However, not everybody has the sheer chutzpah to deal with pain that is more than seemingly one can bear. And it is understandable that people every day find it easier to stop this agony and to start over than to persevere and work through the dark night of the soul to the dawning of the next day. The problem, you see, is that there was an insistence on not knowing anything and having to come to the realization of one's true nature by oneself, having to come to faith, having to come to the will to live and live lovingly. Choice. That's a tough one. And certainly I have experienced life many times as a kind of boot camp where you just need to suck it up and keep putting one foot in front of the other in the knowledge that all is well and all will be well. I'm a tough old girl because I have faith. I will always find joy. I will always find enough. The waters. And I am rich indeed. But I don't know how to give it away. I don't know how to market that toughness, how to help people become willing to live this life. Don Elkins chose the ending of his life. So I had to look at it very closely. It was almost the ending of mine because I physically felt that I should be with him for a long time. Finally, I came to the conclusion that indeed all was well, that even his life ending had been in its own way right, the most loving act he could choose in the world he saw. Whatever healing he had to go through, I saw him well and happy very shortly after his death, glowing in a golden light and laughing. Fortunately or unfortunately, once the choices had been made by the guardians who set up this particular illusion, they were set. And we are the sometimes ragged travelers on the road dealing with life as we know it. So be it. I think it's useless, Jay, to time beyond a certain point at people having a hard time with this catalyst. I think it's understandable that people get lost in this illusion. I think it's remarkable that any of us wakes up and smells the coffee, because it's not that obvious. You really have to dig. And when you find it, it's difficult to find somebody to talk to about it that agrees with you in any way. It's wild. Cover up how difficult things are. Give you reasons to hang on. You know, let's get rich, let's get famous, let's get whatever. All the goals of the 10,000 things. But it's still, and I will admit it, I am not one who says, you know, just think about good things, just be positive and all good things will come to you. I mean, it's very good to try to stay positive. It's excellent, in fact. And the more you focus on thoughts of love and service, the more your heart expands, the lighter you get, the more you shift into the consciousness that is ready for graduation into the next density or grade. I guess, as confused as that was, that's pretty much the way I think about suicide. Guys, pitch in.
I think the planet Earth is unique in that we have a number of sources, I think 16 or 17 different other third density planets that failed to make the grade, shall we say, at harvest and needed another third density planet upon which to incarnate for another 75,000 years. That's a lot of different sources and a lot of problems and a lot of proven difficulty in handling the catalyst. So I think Earth is... probably got a higher rate than most third to fourth density graduations in, shall we say, in the rest of the creation. I imagine there's some places like Earth, but with this many people that have had difficulty making the grade before, I think that further difficulty is easy to guess that's going to happen. But I think that with the difficulty of using the catalyst here, there's also the great reward of making progress on the spiritual path, and that if one has enough difficulty, eventually you find your way through all of this. There's help, there are guides and teachers and friends on the inner planes that answer a call, and that it's sort of like the divine no pain, no gain. There's a lot of pain value here, but there's also a lot of gain value. And I think that as people do make it through to the fourth density, that they're very likely to remain and to help out those that are still here and wanting to graduate themselves. So eventually I think there probably will be a momentum that will occur for Earth that will bring it forth. And all of this, the pain of the birth of fourth density Earth, will then be over.
Austin, how about you?
Sort of like what Carla was saying, it seems that in our particular reality, the parameters are set and there's no mid-game tweaks to how we experience things. But I think it's important to remember that we are also coming here. You know, we make the choice to come here. We don't have to. We don't have to incarnate. We all feel like we could handle it before we get here, and then we get here, and sometimes what we felt before we got here isn't necessarily true. But we realize this, and people are brave enough to try, and always there will be some people who don't make it all the way through, but this is a difficult reality, and we realize that before we come here, and we are brave enough to try anyways. And thanks to this reality, we know it's not necessarily the most efficient as far as spiritual evolution goes, even though if you are able to use the catalyst that is here, it is, as Jim was saying, a massive spiritual growth. But I think as far as a net spiritual growth, you know, in this particular Logos, we've lost Maldek completely, and Mars was made completely uninhabitable, so two whole planets couldn't continue their spiritual evolution. So I think that further Logoi, after this one, will probably learn from the so-called mistakes of this one, and that what we are experiencing now is useful, and that hopefully other Logoi will not create the same conditions that might cause people to blow up their own planet or cause people to commit suicide. And hopefully what we're going through isn't necessarily in vain. There's lots to learn from it, lots for the Creator to harvest from our illusion, and hopefully we're helping the system by being here.
I think you're right there. Our lightening the conscience of planet Earth every time we choose love.
Yeah, to examine it from that angle, the way Austin approached it, and that being that a creator designs this infinite universe with this curriculum of densities that happens in octaves, with the whole goal being to know itself and to grow. I mean, the Logoi want growth. They design the whole, all of the parameters for growth. They instituted the veil because there wasn't the growth that was needed without the veil. So they put this in place to kind of, you might say, speed things up a little bit. And then here we have a planet like this where so much, the suffering is so pervasive and daunting, and it seems like a lot of growth isn't happening. So, you know, one could conclude that it's not the most efficient of designs. Yes, for the individual who does grasp the baton, and like Carla was saying earlier, wake up and smell a coffee, the potentials are enormous and intense and unique to hear. But then again, for the mass of humanity, it just seems like they're waiting, W-A-D-I-N-G, in suffering or mired in it. And then one, in examining the situation, can take a look at the Logos and question the intelligence of this particular arrangement. Like, was this the best setup? Because it seems, at least on the surface, from our limited vision, to not be the most efficient in producing net, as Austin said, spiritual growth. JP kind of asked two questions, one about the difficulty here of life on this planet and how that manifests or is indicated by suicides. So briefly on the question of suicide, I generally see it as a loss of perspective, a perspective that has become muddied or distorted and narrowed and confined, and one is in a great state of despair and is cut off from themselves and from inspiration and from resources of faith, etc. And that's kind of what it seems to amount to, that loss of perspective. And if the larger perspective could be gained somehow through some act of faith or grace or will, like Carla was talking about in her opening riff, it could be articulated as knowing that this world is not my kingdom. And then with that sort of perspective, with that sort of consciousness, you can endure tribulations with patience. You can find ways to serve when you don't feel like you're of service. And you can face the darknesses and the sufferings and know that no matter how difficult it is on the surface, these difficulties can be endured and they can be processed and healed and loved, and eventually, with sufficient grit and endurance, they can be learned from, and growth can be the result.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have someone in your life who has a tendency towards suicidal thoughts or actions, anything that you could help to help them gain that perspective, I think, could be very helpful. And this is a timely question because there's a certain much beloved celebrity that I think yesterday, Sunday, August 11th,
mm-hmm.
Robin Williams apparently killed himself after a long battle with severe depression. And to those whose lives he touched, whether you saw him in his movies or whether you knew him personally.
Mark and Mindy.
Yeah. He seemed a very bright light in this world. One of his incarnational missions was to lighten the place up.
He really did a good job of it. He could take a scarf and he could become 40 different people in 5 minutes and make you laugh at every single one of them. He saw things so clearly, and I think that clear vision is sometimes can be an enemy because, as you said, if you have the clear vision but you don't have a good perspective, things seem to be very, very harsh, and there doesn't seem to be any way out.
No, and despite having what many on this planet would consider, and I presume, favorable outer circumstances in his life, including fame and wealth, and any kind of support system he might need, that perspective was gone. He apparently lost the battle, you could conceive of it this way, in his mind, or in his soul, or in his heart.
Yeah.
And then he decided that it was the only option for him was an escape, that to end the body was to end the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've heard Stanislav Grof talk about how people confuse suicide with egocide. That being like they enter some kind of crisis, and what needs to die is what you could call the ego self or the personality self. But instead of engaging that process and allowing the ego to die, they end the body thinking that in ending the body, I'm ending the pain, ending the suffering. But it's a fallacy.
It is. It just means you have to go back and do it again.
Yeah.
You know, ooh. That thought alone would keep me alive, you know. Oh, I don't want to do this again. I'm going to stick it out.
Yeah, you're not ending, from our metaphysics, you're not ending your lessons. You can't get away from your lessons.
So I guess all in all, we agree with you, sir. We think it's a tough one here. And we kind of wish that there had been some little tweak, some little hole in the veil of forgetting so that we could see through to the glory of the truth and rest in that no matter what the outer circumstances. I wish with you that could be so. Let's just pray that, you know, as our lives touch others, that there's something in them, in our actions with them that lifts a little bit of sadness from them and makes them smile.
In considering suicide, there's a subtype of suicide called euthanasia, where people with terminal conditions facing a guaranteed death sentence and suffer horribly in a bodily way, who choose willingly to take their life. And while Rod didn't touch on the subject, nor do I recall other Confederation sources, though it may be in there. But in my mind, I put that into a slightly different category and think there may be more cause for that, but I don't know. It just seems natural. All right. I wanted to also touch on the veil as it pertains to this question, because JP is asking why is it so difficult here, and we've tackled this in different ways, and I think Jim was beginning especially to get to the veil. And so much of this earth experience seems to be the result of what Ra calls the veil of forgetting. Some time ago, the Logoi put their heads to together and instituted this experiment. It hadn't been done before. It was novel. And they said, let's veil things, which created a situation that Ra calls that the veil was of such significance that it may be seen to be analogous to the mantling of the earth over all the jewels within the earth's crust. Whereas previously, all facets of the Creator were consciously known, after the veiling, almost no facets of the Creator were known to the mind. Almost all was buried beneath the veil. So here we are on this side of the veil, and everything's darkness to us. Love is not obvious. The Creator is not obvious. Everything seems separate and finite, and that's painful enough. But Ra says that there is value in this situation. I'll read two of their quotes. In 82.18, Ra says, it is our perception that such conditions, prior to the veil, created the situation of a most pallid experiential nexus in which lessons were garnered with the relative speed of the turtle to the cheetah. Pallid here I define as dull and uninteresting or lacking sparkle or liveliness. So this is before the veil. Things were pallid and moved along at the speed of the turtle to the cheetah. And in 82.22, Ra says about life before the veil, consider, if you will, the tendency of those who are divinely happy, as you call this distortion, to have little urge to alter or better their condition. There is the possibility of love of other selves and service to other selves, but there is the overwhelming awareness of the Creator in the self. The connection with the Creator is that of the umbilical cord. The security is total. Therefore, no love is terribly important, no pain terribly frightening. No effort, therefore, is made to serve for love or to benefit from fear. So as backwards as our situation is, the veil has some value, according to Ra. And in our particular case, it's not just the veil, though. It's the result of, like Jim was saying, 16 different groupings here. And when we've been thrown into this mix, in the main, most of us are, of course, trying to survive, trying to do the best we can. But in the main, we are tend to seek distraction and sleep and comfort rather than seeking to polarize one or the one way or the other. And that's created really intense confusion and suffering here, so much so that Ra even says in 3.6, we cannot plumb the depths of the distortion complexes which infect your peoples. But this situation we find ourselves in, and this is the final point I want to respond with to this question, and that's that this situation is a result of our choices and our desires and what we have intended, even though we've done so in a very confused way. Ra says in 8.11 that the technology your peoples possess at this time is capable of resolving each and every limitation which plagues your social memory complex at this present nexus of experience. But it's as to a world that has less pain, it will happen, I guess, when we want it or when we grasp the needle and point the compass in one direction. Does anybody else have any thoughts to add to that question?
No, I think that's a fine summing up. Thanks, Gary.
As to our next question, I've been on my feet for this show instead of sitting down so as to give the body some movement. Austin and I are glued to the chairs all day long. So we have a series of questions that come from Folk Love. Let's start with couple of the shorter ones and then see what kind of time we have remaining, because it's 1:37. Folklove says, I often feel as though my incarnation is not destined to be a long one in terms of years. Being in my early 20s, I feel quite a sense of weariness and can't imagine myself growing old and gold like Carla and Jim. I have felt like this for quite a while, and I'm wondering if it's possible for a person to be aware of the length of their incarnations during the incarnation. I should add that I am not at all suicidal, but simply seeing my higher self pulling the plug once certain lessons are learned to a satisfactory level. Good day, amigos.
I would tend to respond in the negative. I think it's very unlikely that we know the length of our days. And it's no use listening to people who think that they know, because they don't. I've been supposed to be dying for the last 71 years, pardon me. And I'm still here and still going strong. So no, and you can't consult authority to know physically in terms of health how you're going to last. I do think that we're here to complete, you know, a mission of service and learning. And I think it's accurate to say that once that is completed, we leave. I have known people that seem to get it all, have everything that they needed, and leave quite early in life. Whew. And then there are the rest of us. Who are just really working hard and trying to play catch up and do our very best to serve and to learn what we came here to do, but who obviously have not completed a task as of yet. And I think, you know, the thinking of it is a little bit working against your best interests, in that what you think about and focus on to create a motion. You start thinking about doom and gloom, and you start seeing lots of doom and gloom. I think it's better not to try to figure out how long you're going to live and just think about what can I do today. How can I complete that mission? What do I think I need to do? What's my learning? What's my service? Good questions to ask.
Jim or Austin?
I've heard stories, read a lot about some people who have predicted their own death, both the way that they die or general time frames of when they're going to die. Don't know how true they are, but I'm sure some of them are. I think the main point, though, is just how vague intuitive perception can really be. And I do think it's possible, while I agree with Carla mostly that it's unlikely, I do think it's possible that somebody could sort of predict that their own incarnation won't be too long, or predict how they might leave early. But it's an intuitive perception, which is always just so you can never really rely on it at 100%. You're getting this feeling from your intuition, your unconscious mind, saying that you might not live a very long life and that you might depart earlier than most people. But whether that feeling is coming from your higher self, coming from a place of clear truth of the unseen realms of pre-incarnative agreements, or whether it's coming from something smaller inside your own sort of personal unconscious mind,
mm-hmm.
It's really hard to tell which is which. And some people are a lot better at honing their intuition to where they can really see psychic truths like that. But for the most part, I feel like intuition should always be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt and never relied on completely.
I think that to one who can read auras, that the time of the death is also something that can be read, but I'm familiar with just one person that was able to do anything like that, and then he chose not to use the ability because it changed people's lives to know that. So I think it's a good thing not to know and to live every day for its fullest. Like Carla said, what can I do today to help out?
Yeah, what you point out, Jim, is like the problem with going to a psychic. Austin and I have discussed this. That's like, say you're looking for a girlfriend or a relationship, and the psychic tells you, yes, you will meet the love of your life, and she will appear in a red car and blonde hair, and she'll have blonde hair. And then you meet and fall in love with a brunette who drives an orange beetle. And so you have this thing in your head now, like, that could disqualify this person who's actually there in front of you that you love, waiting for this other fictional thing. And that's why you have to be really careful in receiving news of the future or making these sorts of certainties, because it can cause you to miss what's actually transpiring in your life with these expectations about what's to come.
Right.
My mom, for years I grew up, she got this palm reading when I don't know if I was alive yet or not, but yeah, I think this is before I was born. She got this palm reading, and this lady predicted this trip that she was going to go on, and also said that she was going to die at a young age. I think my mom had 40s in her mind. So because of the accuracy of the first prediction, I grew up with my mom, you know, occasionally saying she was going to die young. She was certain of that. And couldn't loosen that conviction. And then after I graduated high school, there was a divorce between my mom and my dad, and she kind of went through a rebirth and had a second trajectory offered to her in life. And then I said, well, what if what that psychic saw wasn't that you would physically die, but that you would go through like an death of an identity and a rebirth into a new one? And my mom really liked that interpretation and ran with it and has not, as of yet, died young.
I think she's running out of time
there.
Well, she's a 60 now, so I think she's past her original conception of when it was going to happen. But like you guys, I think it's totally possible. Jesus, apparently, according to the law of one, had pre-incarnationally designed into his life this mission of the martyr, because Ra talks about how Jesus could have avoided going to Jerusalem, but his life path would have been confused at that point. So he chose to stick with the guiding winds of destiny, or his pre-incarnational programming. So there's a possibility he could have sensed that in advance, or somebody around him could have. And on the idea of wariness, that is folklore that is so common, I think with everybody on this planet, but especially spiritual seekers. I know in my life, all my circumstances are entirely manageable. I'm not a single mom working two jobs trying to feed four kids. But I swear, I can't. Sometimes I feel like I'm spread too thin and I'm burning the wick at two ends. And that's not unique to me whatsoever. I see that everywhere. It's just, I don't know why. I guess you could identify a lot of reasons, but it's quite common. And would say to you to try to find some way to relax, to recoup, to nourish yourself, to take care of yourself, as Jim and Carla described in Book 5, to nurture your inner beingness. Anybody have any further thoughts on Folk Love's question?
No, I think that all of us sort of agree that it's unlikely that Folklove is really in his perception that he may die young. And I hope he doesn't, because these are very intelligent questions. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not the answers that make us smart, it's the questions. Anybody who can ask these questions has got hopefully a long and fruitful life ahead of him.
Yeah, Folklove has supplied us with lots of really, really great questions.
Yeah.
Thank you, Folklove.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
And to, in reverse order, Folklove's next question, is there something to be said about growing at too fast a rate? Can this be damaging, or should the seeker try all that they can do to welcome more light into their lives? Like to start with, and to be clear, I think too fast means trying to reaching for and working with the energies of the higher chakras without being adequately integrated, activated, cleared, and balanced in the lower chakras. And as a consequence, this too fast movement creates more confusion rather than less, more distortion rather than less. And there's enormous potential for massive imbalance Which leads to one way to sum it up is to say that you inflate your separate self. You become opaque and not transparent. And in this imbalance and in trying to move too fast, you're bringing, from what I gather, you're bringing a power or an energy into your system. And if you haven't done the work of the lower chakras adequately or you haven't understood them and accepted them and integrated them, then those blockages kind of hijack that power that you've brought into your system because you're trying to work with the higher chakras. And then once those patterns inside of yourself, or what you could call your shadow self, hijack that power, then you, if you're moving too fast, then you fall under the compulsion of your shadow side. And so that, you know, it kind of runs you. It's these runaway energies, and suddenly you're running away with it, engaged in some form of separation, some sort of anger, some sort of conflict, some sort of desire to dominate, manipulate, deceive, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought is, like, definitely reach for and welcome all the light that you can, however you conceive of this, but do so only from wherever you are. Whatever your current state, whatever you are experiencing in this moment, precisely that will get you there. You don't need to reach for some other thing and some other time and some other place. Work on becoming aware of and accepting your present experience and witness that which transpires in this moment. And especially if you have conflict with somebody else or conflict within yourself, put your attention on that. That's a big flag and indicator saying this is where you need to do work. And if you try to ignore these difficulties or bypass them, that's another way of moving too fast, because those energies are still alive within you while you're reaching higher. And like I was describing earlier, I think they can kind of topple you. That's it for me, guys.
Well, I do think that you can gain a great deal from living life with a light touch. Find humor in, no matter how serious you are about wanting to be very pure in your spirituality, lighten up, lift away. And like Gary said, let enough be enough. Otherwise, I've seen people burn out to where they couldn't do the work at all. They had to just sit by the side of the road and breathe, you know, and that was it. They were gone. They were lost to beautiful spiritual development that they started doing, but they pushed too hard, you know. They meditated too long, too often. Like Gary said, working on those higher chakras without working on the lower chakras. So, yeah, lighten up and make sure that you're balanced. You got your both feet on the ground. Your head's in the clouds. That's the right way. Austin, I haven't heard from you or Jim.
I'm generally in agreement. I actually was going to attempt to touch on some, like, physiological ideas of growing too fast, and that growth, basically spiritual growth, is sort of like acquiring new world views as you sort of elevate in your awareness. And from there are some instances where people can have this grand experience and their worldview is completely changed from the moment before, sometimes in deep meditation, or they have maybe what could be considered contact with intelligent infinity. But for most people, most of the time, it's going to require sort of a switch in your wiring in your brain to actually see the world in a different perspective. Your brain has to be wired to receive that perspective. And if you have this idea of spiritual growth that you want to fulfill, you might feel ashamed if you're not fulfilling that, and your brain will naturally reject any kind of experience of you not fulfilling that. So say you think that anger is a hallmark of not being spiritually evolved, and you believe that you are spiritually evolved to the point where you don't feel anger, you might intentionally try to, unconsciously cover up your anger. Your brain will naturally just reject the actual anger, but it still exists in your unconscious. And that's what Gary was talking about as far as bypassing and going further than you really are ready to. And that's what I think that the idea of spiritual growth being a primary goal, making that your goal, can create situations like that where you believe you should be more evolved than you are, and you end up creating a split in your psyche that you then have to backtrack later on once it gets worse. And so I'm in general agreement that just going day to day, trusting that you will draw to you the experiences you need to draw to you, trusting that you have set up an incarnational plan that will allow you to unfold and grow at the rate that is comfortable and at a rate that is realistic, and that at a rate will allow your brain to release old wiring and promote new wiring. Neural pathways have to be activated again and again for them to become prominent, and once one has been activated enough, it can activate 100 times easier than one that has never been activated before. And so that's how new perspectives are difficult to bring on and how old perspectives are difficult to let go of. And meditation helps that. When you enter a deep space of meditation, the neuroplasticity in your brain actually increases and it's much easier to rewire to a new configuration. But it's still a gradual process to adopt new perspectives, broader perspectives, and trying to jump ahead before your brain is actually ready can cause you to regress rather than progress.
My only addition would be that I don't think that we need to worry about growing too fast or too slow or anything. I don't think we can take our spiritual temperatures and really know what's happening in that regard. I think that it might be better to focus on the momentum that our seeking has brought us to at our current level and continue that momentum, continue the journey. You've gotten to where you are now because you've traveled a certain path, and keep on going. Do what's in front of you. Do what the little voice inside says.
Indeed. Anybody have any more thoughts for that question?
I'm done.
All right. Well, it's 1:55, so we'll wrap it up. We'll talk about homecoming for a minute, and Carla will send you off, and we'll do our closer. So in 17 days, 17 days. We have our annual homecoming gathering.
He ran out of fingers and had to take his shoes off. That was the problem.
Don't fail me now, Toes. We have our annual homecoming gathering here in Louisville, Kentucky. It is an event where people who have some interest in this philosophy, some who are new to it and some who have been working with it since the very beginning, gather to share not only their love of this information and not only spiritual topics, but more fundamentally they come to share themselves in a very open and supportive and non-judgmental atmosphere. And in my opinion, and it's one that is would be backed up, of course, by everybody here on the line, but also by many who have attended these workshops, that this coming together creates a sort of palpable love in the air. You can feel it. It's a good time. So if you're interested and you're in our neck of the woods, or going to be the final weekend of August, which is also Labor Day weekend in the United States, sign up for our homecoming. You can find more information on the homepage of our website, bringforth.org. And with that, I turn to you, Carla, if you would like to say something.
All right. Yeah, please come, guys. I'd love on you a little bit and feed you some good food and just be with you. And listen to what you have to say, whatever, doesn't matter, just come, and I think that you'll really be glad you did. Wonderful people do that. As far as in general, I always have the one thing to say, and that is that we love you all. We love you so much. When you have a question that you think we might be able to help with, please let us know. We'd love to help. That's what we're here for. Not that we know much, but we're willing to give you anything we got. So there is my send-off. I love you so much.
Carla, and thank you, Jim and Austin. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed this show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions this week, Folklove and JP. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we'll talk with you then.
I land on an island coast that only flows, I see a ghost. I run through a wooded island, chase the sunlight mile after mile. And I feel like I know this place, and a tree line breaks in the wide open space. I stare at a bright red sun, search all day and never find anyone. Planets turn and the old stars